This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly sponsored by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. As a City supporter, we know you value delivery, and McDelivery is up there with the very best. You'll always be winning with McDelivery because just like Kevin De Bruyne, McDelivery puts your order right on a plate. So the only thing left to say is, are you in? Order now on the McDonald's app and you can also get rewards points delivered as well. So that ordering today means some tasty rewards for you tomorrow. Only via the app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required, points only on menu items, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. City win, United lose. How bloody beautiful is that? It's Monday the 4th of March. I'm Amos Murphy.
I'm Joe Butterfield.
And I'm Ollie Kirsch.
And this is a very happy City Report podcast.
Comes here for Gundogan! It is a thrilling start for Manchester City. The fastest ever goal in an FA Cup final. 2023 is the City treble year. Champions of England, FA Cup winners, and now, at last, champions of Europe. Manchester City are kings of Europe. Now they have their triple crown.
Welcome back to the City Report podcast, the start of hopefully another wonderful week. We've got big smiles on our faces. Chaps, City beat United. It will never get old, Ollie. Immediate thoughts.
I'll say it. It'll never get old. It will never get old. It doesn't matter how good we are, how shit they are, where, you know, what we're fighting for title wise, what they're doing. It doesn't matter. To beat them on the day doesn't change. It doesn't change.
No. It's unfiltered joy, isn't it?
Yeah.
That's what I felt during the stadium.
Yeah, and it is the turn. It is the stadium as well. It's the fans. You know, a lot of games, even bigger games we have, we've got portions of the stadium that are a bit quiet, or something trips in that stadium when it's United and when we're beating them. They start to filter out. Your fucking shit chants come out. Chants about Ten Hag come out, or as it was
the Glazers,
or as it was Jose and Van Gaal and Mourinho, and it's just fun. It's a lot of fun. I think when the games are wrapped up against them, you know, we pay for it back in all the horrible, you know, the build up, the nerves, etc. Yeah. But when the games are wrapped up against them, it's just fun. The opportunity to take the piss, the opportunity to enjoy. Especially games when players like Phil and Haaland are scoring, you know, these boyhood City fans. It's magic.
Do you think we enjoy beating United more than United ever enjoyed beating us? Like, we had the 20 years of like being massively underdogs compared to, like, certainly in the Premier League era, certainly anyway, we've had like 20 years of just being by far like not expected to win these games. Sort of like if we beat them, that was like a massive thing for us, whereas for them it was like, well, we should beat them. But now, even though we're in a position where we should beat them, we still have the fact that this is kind of payback for the previous 20 years to sort of make it mint no matter what. Like, it's always, so we're never going to have a derby win where we're like, oh yeah, I mean, like, it's yeah, cool, but like, we should have won that. Like, even when we have those games, it's like, yeah, fuck off, United. Like, this is exactly
what
you all deserve.
It's still bouncing in it. Yeah, those games where City, I think back a couple of years, maybe 21, 22 season, City, apart from 10 minutes, Sancho scored, and I think they were level for 10 minutes. City scored early on. City were ahead at halftime, whatever. Other than that, City have kind of had a little bit of needle in these games against United, and maybe that helps, but I still think you just, look, we're biased, and we've spoke in the preview show what beating United means to us, and that's not the same for all City fans, and we understand that's just the modern way it is. But I just personally cannot ever get old of that. I just cannot ever sort of, you know, we could have gone 5-0 up and I still would have loved it. We could have gone 2-0 up in the second half. Just even the way it was beautiful, but just beating United. Look at us, bit of blues, Ollie. But yeah, I think it's important to start the show with something like this because it will never get old.
To Joe's point, I think we do wholly enjoy beating them more than they enjoy beating us. Not because we do more than we should, but they, for them, it's less. They're entitled, right? They have this weird Darwinist.
They don't care about City.
No,
they don't.
That's what they'll tell you.
They've got this weird Darwinist view of football, right? Where the big clubs should be the top clubs and the other clubs.
Look at this. We've got philosophical conversation.
But it absolutely is. It absolutely is. They've got this deluded mentality because football started in 1992 that the clubs that have been at the top of the order, you know, from 92 onwards to about, you know, 08, 09, 10, that is the natural order of things and that's how it should be. For them, beating us is an entitlement thing. For us, it is the raw joy of beating your local rivals.
Football. It's that for me, that's football in its purest sense.
Absolutely.
I think that might sound silly, but for me, that's how
football they see it as some bastardization of the natural order of football. Like,
I personally don't think it's even, I'd love for it to be as lovely and poetic as it just being, it's pure football. It's just, it's spite. Like, for me, it's 100% spite. Like,
there's where you and I differ.
I'm with Joe on this one.
Having gone through like high, because obviously like high, when you're a kid, like as someone like me who didn't grow up with, in my house, there was no Sky Sports. Like, I couldn't watch football. I didn't have a City season ticket because my parents didn't go, so I had no way of watching City. My consumption of it was like match of the day and stuff like that until around high school age, and that's when obviously your mates start to get really into football as well. Like, so football in my sort, like my sort of peak awareness of everything going on with football and sort of getting into it really properly was when United were winning Champions Leagues, and like, it was, and your mates giving you constant abuse for that, and being able to turn around to those same mates now and just like, and just know that they're like, see how depressed they are going into every single Manchester derby is genuinely, it gives me that almost gives me as much joy as winning. Like, that is just like, it's the sort of the ability for them to sort of, for them to know how it felt for me going into school the day after getting absolutely battered by, like, that Michael Owen derby, like going into school the next day was just the worst thing ever.
That was disgusting.
And obviously we've not ever had something that's quite, obviously other than the Aguero moment, we've not really had anything quite on that level, and that wasn't even in a derby to him. But knowing that we're bringing even a fraction of the emotion that I felt back then every time we do this is just wonderful stuff.
It's nice to start the show, start a Monday morning with something like this. It does feel a little cathartic, a little bit, just getting those emotions out. But that's what Derby Day is, people. That is how it goes. We will speak about the football, because an intriguing fixture, it has to be said, a cliche alert, but a game of two halves. And Ollie, I'll let you decide if you want to start with the second half and the positives, or you want to start with the first half and the, I'd say, kind of positives. It depends where you come at it. In fact, let's go with the first half because it almost leads on to that second half. But contrasting opinion online about that first half in terms of people saying it was one of City's best of the season, but they couldn't finish. And other people saying, oh my God, it's happened again. City in big games. I'm hesitant to say shit the bed because I think City were largely the better team. In fact, they were the better team. We'll speak about United as an entity in part two, but dominated by City. However, at the same time, the level City set, it was considerably lower than it should have been. How did you interpret that first half? For me, it was one of, probably the word I used to describe it was frustration. Anything else.
Yeah, it was frustration, but for me it was frustration born out of the fact that we were playing so well across the pitch and we just couldn't get the ball in the net, epitomised by Haaland's incredible mischance. But yeah, I mean, looking at the stats,
worst of his City career, I think. It has to be said at this juncture.
Yeah, par for the course for Sterling back in his day. when you talk about shocking misses, that unfortunately for Raheem, despite the quite incredible amount of goals that he actually scored by the end of his City career, it'll be remembered for those misses. And when something like that happens, you think, fuck it. But just on the two halves thing, I mean, First half, 2.73 XG. Second half, 0.59. First half, 18 shots. Second half, 9 shots. These are City's numbers, by the way. I think the frustration was because we were doing everything right. We started really well. I think we had two corners within the first 2 minutes. We went forward straight away. The chance that Haaland had, we were just wasteful. But everywhere else on the pitch, it was absolutely fine. One minor lapse in concentration with their goal, but I mean, there's not really too much you can do about that. You know, I was initially frustrated with Diaz for not dealing with the ball over the top, but I've watched it back. He did well. He jockeyed his man, forced a pass backwards, and when Rashford hits it, there's not much you can do. So, a little bit frustrated about conceding the goal. Go on.
Is that a worry? In fact, Joe, I'll ask you this question and we'll sort of kind of move on. Joe, is that a worry that City conceding these goals? And it's a horrible question to ask because how do you legislate for it? But I have to ask the question. You know, I'm sat in this hosting chair, I have to ask the question. But at the same time, how often can a one-off occasion where City concede the first shot on target and that shot happens to be a worldie be considered a coincidence? It's happened enough now where we're going, oh shit, it's happening a lot.
I can see by Ollie's reaction to you asking that question, my answer's not going to please him. I think it's actually we've had a lot of big games where a mad goal like that has just happened. Like, and I don't know.
It's almost every week, isn't it?
I don't know. I don't know how you can.
That's crazy to say.
There's literally nothing that anybody in that City squad can do about that. I mean, like you can maybe say like, oh, well, someone wins the header, someone you know, you tackle Fernandes instead of letting him lay it off back to Rashford. But once he hits that ball, unless Ederson pulls off like a genuinely world-class save, like there's nothing you can do about that going in. But I'm just thinking back to all these games we've played against, because obviously with the next game being Liverpool at Anfield, like how many world-class goals have we conceded there? Like I remember we've had so many where we've just been dominant and then all of a sudden fucking Fabinho smashes it in from 30 yards out and that's it. Like the game, like we're 1-0 down.
Yeah.
And like, It's not an endemic thing. It's not something that the sort of the club needs to be looking at and worrying about. Going like, oh, we need to stop conceding these world class 0.03 XG goals, like because you can't do that. But in the first half, obviously, whilst it's easy to say, whilst Ollie's absolutely right in what he was saying in terms of the absolute dominance we had, like the shots we create, the shots we had, the chances we created, and stuff like that. Did anybody here really feel like we were going to score until Haaland like had that shot that went over?
I didn't. Yes.
No.
Did that's you? Interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't think City were going to score at all.
So yes. when we were, because in the group chat, I remember Joe Ritchie at some point sort of mentioned that it was like we had something like 2 point something XG. This is before the Haaland chance. We had something like we're approaching 2XG. And I was just thinking, what chance created that?
What
like,
from?
Where did that come from? And then obviously you get to the end of the half and see the number of shots we've had. And I genuinely might think differently when I watch it on Match of the Day later tonight, but I can't think of any like serious guilt-edged chances that we had.
Foden's one-on-one.
That's a big one. That's,
yeah.
You know,
that one that forced the long save from Onana.
It's a conversation to be had. Yeah, about his potential deficiencies, one-on-one. Look, we're not here to slate Voden. We'll get onto him very shortly. No, I'm saying, look, and this is me nitpicking, but if you're talking about a player who's going from world-class to being one of the greatest in the world of all time, etc., one-on-one Foden can probably improve. We'll get to Foden, I promise. I've got a big segment planned for him. But other than that, Ollie, just quickly, that first half for me, I didn't feel like it didn't have the rhythm, I don't think. You know, a lot of the times, take City versus Real Madrid, for example. Obviously, we scored. And I think you can maybe make comparisons between the two halves because City had so much of the ball. But the chances City were creating, I just felt were, it'd go out wide and it'd be a spammed cross, be that from Kevin De Bruyne, be that from Phil Foden, who was playing out on the wide right to start off with. And I took issue with that personally. Jeremy Doku was getting doubled up again, and it's another problem for him. He just doesn't seem to get any space to work in, and maybe opposition managers spot that and send two defenders to mark him. And I feel sorry for the guy at this point, but it wasn't working for him either. It was only until that second half I felt like City actually looked threatening. It was only until Foden's worldie that I actually thought City could possibly score.
Yeah, no, I'm sorry. I'm just not with you guys on that. I'm really not. And maybe this is kind of different hindsight that we've got from each other looking back at it. But I remember thinking in the first few minutes we've started really well, the goal's going to come.
The start was great.
The start was great.
But I mean, after that United goal, we just didn't look like City. It felt like we went and chased the game for 15 minutes.
No, I still disagree. Listen, we didn't create that many gilt-edged chances. We did get a few. Again, United made 8 blocks in that first half, 18 shots. We were getting shots off on goal. We didn't create too many of the one-on-ones or the Haaland practically open net from 1 yard away. But it was a attack versus defence. We were dealing with their long ball, route one balls over the top very nicely and then just driving back forward at them. And I remember thinking as we got towards the half-time mark, thinking in my head, if I'm a United fan now sat in that other end, I'm thinking if we allow them to keep doing this, they will get their goal. Yeah. They will score. So, I don't know. Maybe it's hindsight. Maybe I need to go back and watch. Maybe you need to go back and watch. But I did feel like it was coming eventually. It just took a little bit longer than I thought it was going to.
Just to quickly get on, just before we move on to the next bit, like the XG that we had in that first half was 2.73. And obviously Haaland's was a 0.89, I think it was, or something like that.
minus a one. And then including
that, even if you include that massive Haaland chance, that means that the average XG of every shot we had was 0.15. It's not like we were lining up like tap-ins in the 6 yard box.
You speak about blocks, and for me a lot of the time they were half chances from the edge of the box that I just get closed down because United had so many players. I think City's entire history under Guardiola is about rhythm. And the games we've dropped points at home, a lot of the time this season, we haven't had the rhythm. And for me, that just made that first half made me heart back a little bit.
There were also, going the other way, there was where you feel like the rhythm was a bit off, was that it felt like, even though they didn't do anything with it, because they only had like two shots in that first half, Rashford airballs it and has like we could have had a second goal.
That's a big moment, isn't it? Rashford heads it
into the ground and then runs past it, which if he doesn't head that into the ground and runs past it, he's on a foot race with Kyle Walker, which, fair enough. You'd back Kyle Walker to probably win it, but it still becomes a possible big chance. Like, if we do that against Liverpool, like, I do not expect Liverpool to fuck up those chances in the way that United did. And I think that's why it felt a bit uncomfortable for us all in that first half, because it was looking at us being profligate going one way and looking at us give United chances to run into space the other way, and just thinking we're at Anfield next week. Like, this isn't cool. I don't want to see this.
Salah scores that, basically. Yes.
Walker was fucking golden, though. He fixed that up, Kyle Walker.
He was great. He was really good.
After the first couple of those instances, Walker was switched on every time those balls. I mean, way before the balls were even threatening to come over, he was chasing down Garnacho, putting the afterburners on and making sure he had it covered. Really happy with Kyle today.
Yeah, I think he needed a performance like that as well. I've criticised Kyle Walker enough this season, so I'm happy to hold my hands up and say I thought he was ace. But the player who was comfortably, I can't believe we're 16 minutes into this show and we're only just going on to him, but hey, Davide's a Davide's, aren't they? But Phil Foden, look, I envy anybody who is a football fan who doesn't think Phil Foden is the best player in the Premier League this season. And I actually envy anyone who doesn't think right now, sort of going on 2024, maybe a little bit even further back, Phil Foden is the best player in the world right now, full stop. Because, Joe, there is absolutely nobody doing what Phil Foden's doing right now. And you look at that City team, Erling Haaland, Bernardo Silva, Kevin De Bruyne, Rodri, Stones, established winners, treble winners, and obviously Phil Foden was in that squad. But we're talking about the main guy, the main man, Phil Foden, who is the guy putting City on the back. And look, that first goal, that equaliser, could come out of nothing. Rashford scored an equally sort of world-class goal, and it's obviously not a hit and hope, but you require a little bit of luck to score from that range. But even still, that entire performance, above anything else, for me, that impressed me the most was the tracking back and the winning the ball. It felt like maybe the first hour he was the only player who was really up for it, and he was rewarded with two fantastic goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I think when he missed that one-on-one with Onana, I said to my mate who's a United fan, like, when he was like, that's a big let off that. And I said, honestly, I prefer Phil Foden from 20 yards out than I do in a one-on-one. I back him to score more then. And lo and behold,
especially against the Nana. Exactly. Going back to Istanbul.
Exactly. Yeah. 20, 25 yards out. He just smashes that in. I think that, look, obviously the Rashford goal had a lot of luck behind it, but I think we've seen Foden do that just too many times. Like, United were stupid to give him the amount of space and time that he had on the edge of the penalty area when you know full well what he's capable of. I think it's just, he's like you say, what really separates him, and this is maybe a discussion that can be had about the two players themselves in terms of Rashford and Foden, because both scored, both Manchester boys, both have, you know, both came through with a lot of hype. But I think you look at the two performances side by side, and outside of that ridiculous goal, what did Rashford contribute to United in that game? Mm. Like, he did quite literally nothing. Apart from
he contributed more to City with that missed chance, correct, at 1-0.
Yeah, and other than you know, going down and crying for a foul for before Foden's goal for like the most softest of touches at the edge of our box. I think you see Foden on our side, who's obviously been. The one defense you could give Rashford is that he's the level of coaching that he's received over the last like 6-7 years has obviously been pretty shocking compared to Foden. But you just look at Foden's work rate, you look at his desire in a game like this. Like, if nothing else, you would think a Manchester derby for a Manchester boy should be like the thing that really gets you up and going for it. But Rashford can't even manage that, whereas Foden has, for the second or third time in the last 2 years, taken a derby by the scruff of the neck and just gone, this is mine, like, I'm having it. And I'm so glad that it was him who got obviously Haaland got the icing on the cake at the end of the game, but I'm so glad it was him who took it away from United in the first place by making it 2-1 to us, because it's just, given his performances in the last few months, which have been, well, this season really, which have been ridiculous. Mm. I think he's getting to that level where, like, you know, when we look at Rodri and we think, oh God, if we lose you for a month, we're done for. Like, I don't know what we'd do without Foden based on the last month. Like, obviously, we've still got players who can produce those moments, but Foden's the one who is producing them on a regular basis. Yeah. And I'm not going to jinx it. I'm going to start vigorously touching any wood that's in this room right now. But he's unreal. Yeah, there's not enough words for him.
Yeah. Ollie, do you think it's time Guardiola hands the City team to Phil Foden? Difficult question, probably one that you're not qualified to answer, but what I mean by that is, I think, and interestingly enough, I don't get where I am in the stadium in the corner in 111, don't get a great view of what's going on apart from when it's down at that sort of south stand end. But a lot of the time in that second half, especially in the first half of the second half, Kevin De Bruyne was the guy playing right wing, and it was Phil Foden who was being in the middle. And above anything else, the first half for me, the thing that pissed me off the most was Phil Foden playing right wing, because I think maybe that kind of had something to play with his missed chance one-on-one. He didn't really get the chance to put it on his left foot and sort of coming in that side. I don't know. He never looked comfortable. And even though he was involved, it just sort of, it was a bit wasteful. And a player of his talent, the last thing you want to be doing is wasting it. So do you think maybe now, going into the last couple of months of the season, do you think that's Phil Foden's team? He's, if wherever Phil Foden wants to play, you make him play it.
It's a bit mad, that, isn't it? That entails displacing Kevin De Bruyne.
It does.
In his primary role.
That's the question, though, isn't it? That's what's in front of Guardiola right now.
Yeah, it's crazy. He's gone into Manchester derby and pushed Kevin De Bruyne out onto the wing in a secondary position. I think De Bruyne and Foden have very, very different strengths. I think they
can play together. I think it's important to say right now they can benefit each other.
Of course,
it's whether or not De Bruyne accommodates Foden as opposed to Foden accommodating De Bruyne.
I think Pep's going to start looking at it. Certainly, the one thing that Pep said over the years when people have been crying out to see Phil in a more central position is that he doesn't necessarily have that pauser yet. He doesn't have the ability to control the tempo of a game. He's pretty much got the hang of it, I think. I don't think Phil looks uncomfortable necessarily on the right wing, but I absolutely agree that it's wasteful. You will not get the best out of Phil Foden out on the wing. But we have Kevin De Bruyne in the middle. I think Pep will cook something up that accommodates them both. Naturally, as De Bruyne ticks well into his early 30s, he may start playing a little bit deeper, perhaps, and Foden in front of him. But the way that I see this shaping up is that Phil will principally be used in the middle in the kinds of games where we're up against shithousing deep block teams like today. Where there's 10, 11 men behind the ball, very, very little space to work with, because that's where Phil is is quite possibly the best in the world, working in those very, very, very tight pockets of space, getting on the half turn, finding a pass, finding a shot. Whereas De Bruyne, I think his strength is controlling the tempo of the game from a more advanced position. And when we are against teams that are maybe a little bit more adventurous, like Liverpool, we would have more joy with De Bruyne finding those, finding the penetrating passes through the back line, as opposed to Phil, who's got to work in and around the back line. Little differences, subtle differences. Pep can probably articulate them a lot better than me. but I don't think Phil will necessarily displace De Bruyne. I think they've both got roles to play depending on who we're playing against. And naturally, Kev might drop into a less intensive, deeper tempo controlling role. Maybe similar to Gundogan in a sense in his last couple of seasons at City, whilst Phil, I think, will be the primary hook behind Haaland. Very exciting, yeah. Though. The kid is fucking sensational. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's been sort of mooted for a while, but Kevin De Bruyne dropping into that deeper line role. I've been watching, actually, American listeners will respect this, I've been watching quite a few college football documentaries, a quarterback role. I think that sort of translates. Is Kevin De Bruyne the next Tim Tebow? I don't know. Hopefully Patrick Mahomes living up to that that potential look. We're, yeah, exactly. Ollie, straight over your head, but not mine, because totally. I've been doing my research. For more, I enjoyed that spiel from you. I think you said Pep will put it more articulated. No, you did a spot on job. But for more of that, listeners, stay exactly where you are. We'll be back in part two.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The Etihad Stadium really is wonderful at this time of the season, and the same goes for McDelivery. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com. Welcome back to the City Report podcast, your home for daily Manchester City content. A quick shout out from me for the fella from Florida who stopped me in Mary Deeds for a photograph, said they listened to the show. Big up. I hope you enjoyed your first Manchester derby. It was certainly good. I know, exactly. Look, it's only a matter of time before, like, Stephen House and I start carrying a car machine around for asking people for tips for it. Look, a little bit of Manchester derby needle there. That's what we want. Joe, look, what do you think changed in that second half? Because, look, the difference in opinion has been clear. People thought the first half was great. People thought the first half was bad. But I felt like mentality-wise, more than anything, there was a shift. Julian Alvarez coming off the pitch, on the pitch, at 1-1 it was, wasn't it, when he came on as a sub. And that just sort of, that player closer to goal who has that awareness and can play the pass and can sort of see both sides of the game, I thought was ace. And that's kind of what we've been asking for from Alvarez the last couple of weeks in terms of his involvement. He looked fresher. Mentally and physically, I think, after a couple of games on the bench. But what do you think it was second half? Because City were scintillating, and we'll get on to United and their deficiencies. But yeah, it was a cracking second half.
Yeah, I think I won't go too much into it now because we'll get onto it. But I do think that a large part of it was that United just their intentions of doing anything going the other way just completely evaporated. Like they were happy to try and see out the 1-0 by the looks of things, which. Maybe they were just sort of hoping that frustration would just get the better of City in the end, and that like maybe the crowd would get on their backs a little bit. And you know, if anything, even before the goal, like you could hear coming through the TV. You'll know better than me because you're both in the stadium, but you could hear the City chanting. If anything, was starting to. First half, it felt like a very flat atmosphere through the TV. Like you could hear United away fans like all the way through the half. But I think the sucker punch of United's goal pretty much like flattened it. But second half, you could feel that the crowd was sort of getting behind them a little bit more. Obviously, the team had come out with a lot more I don't know if intensity is the right word, but it felt like they came out a lot more sort of switched on and just like, right, this is like every, it was very much a case of whenever they lost the ball, it was that second ball was just like won immediately. Like it was, they were on it from the pretty much the whole half.
Yeah,
like,
United couldn't get out at all, could they?
No, exactly. And we didn't have as many shots as Ollie pointed out before, we didn't have as many shots in the second half as we did the first, but it felt like we were a lot more, you know, I felt like from about 5 minutes into that half that we would score, like even before Foden eventually did, like it felt like the goal was coming, much more so than it did the first half, despite the fact that maybe before Foden scored, we hadn't actually had more than one or two shots in the whole half. But yeah, I think it's just, it's the way that we sort of went about it can look to me completely different to the first half. Mm. Like it just looked so much more, I don't know if controlled is the right word because we obviously had a lot of the possession in the first half as well and had a lot of the shots. But you mentioned Alvarez coming on. I think I don't want to restart this agenda again. But I think Jeremy Doku is, as we pointed out after the Chelsea game and in the review after that game, I think Doku is being sold down the river quite a lot by Mr. Guardiola in terms of these big games and how he's being used. Because I think, don't get me wrong, he's got his deficiencies and there's things that he can definitely do better. But I think putting...
just wasn't the game for him, was it?
No.
You know, call a spade, it wasn't his game.
He's in these big games where, look, we can joke about United, but they're probably more organised than like half of the Premier League. Like Ten Hag is a better coach than most managers in the Premier League. And it doesn't take much to tell a defence, double up on this winger, and then you've got him locked down for most of the game, and that's exactly what happened. So I think Alvarez coming on and being that sort of that presser and creating that bit of chaos and in the middle and sort of making life harder for their defense. I think that put us much more in control of things by those things. And that's for me it's no coincidence that we scored two goals after that.
Yeah, I totally agree. Look, Doku's an insane talent, but that just first half, I just want to see him come off the bench at one of these teams, and I want to see him run at them when the legs are tired and just tear a defence to shreds, having sort of been... what those little toys you used to have as a kid where you'd wind them up like toy cars, you'd wind them up, and then just let them go and they'd be boom. That's what I want to see Doku doing. He just... Something about starting a game at home, especially in a big match, it doesn't really suit his style of play. And look, Grealish has been out injured far too much than most people would have hoped for. And maybe he's probably playing a little bit more football than was expected. But hey, still contributed to a win in a small way. Ollie, United were, look, how do I put it diplomatically? Shit. just terrible. And look, they conceded six last year, and I think this was probably a worse performance. The way the game panned out, they obviously scored a goal they probably were hoping for, but it was I don't know the XG, somebody mentioned it before, but a one in sort of 200 chance of scoring, whatever. That suited them in a way because it allowed them to bunker in that first half. They frustrated City. But even still, the performance-wise is probably the worst I've seen United at City for post-Fergie, maybe even going beyond that. You know, it was probably the worst performance I've seen United at City ever.
They were utter garbage. It was one of the worst performances I've seen at the Etihad from any team this season.
True.
I just even want to go back to the first whistle for kickoff. We took kickoff, we went backwards, and then we went backwards again. And I think from kickoff, it ended up with Ederson. And I don't know if it was a signal of how they intended to play or PTSD from Gundogan 12 seconds last season. But I look at the ball going backwards. I look at Ederson picking up the ball. Ederson or D, I can't remember which one of them it was, but it was all the way back. And then I swiveled my head to the United end, and they'd all gone backwards. And I think from that moment, I thought, okay, they're not coming to play. The game has literally just started and they are sat on the edge of the box waiting for us to come forward. They were just atrocious in everything they tried to do. Firstly, the game plan was very, very obvious what they were trying to do. They were sat very deep. They were wanting to win the ball back against us in some very uncomfortable positions and fire it forward to Bruno/Rashford/Garnacho. And it worked, albeit through, as we talked about before, quite a freak sensational goal, frankly. But approaching a derby in that manner itself, by the way, is fucking disgraceful. You talk about what rivalries mean and what derbies mean, and being the underdog in a derby as well comes to play. We used to go to Old Trafford, and they used to come to Main Road in the early years of the Etihad, and we had a wholly worse squad comparatively than they do now. And Sean Goater, bless him, legend of his time, would still absolutely run his bollocks off, and we would, you know, we came to play. Sometimes we'd get smashed for it, but we came to play. And then you've got United fans complaining that City play a boring style of football. This is why. You have just perfectly demonstrated why, because you and many other teams will come to the Etihad and you will sit back and sit back and sit back. And unfortunately, despite what these people think, you cannot run and flick your right stick left and right and dribble through an entire team. Right, you have to recycle the ball and look for the opening when you are sitting 11 men on the edge of your box. So that's number one. They came with a shameful game plan for a derby. Mm. Secondly, I don't know what the hell Ten Hag does every day of every week, but they didn't even pull that off very well. Right, it wasn't a defensive masterclass despite the low block, because they conceded 28 shots. That's two more shots than possession percentage. They had 26%. So we were getting clear cut chances. We bagged three. It could have been another three if it wasn't for Onana / Haaland's dodgy shooting boots / Phil Foden's 1-on-1 deficiencies. So they didn't do that well. They tried the route one football. They didn't do that particularly well either. They didn't really create much clear cut. When they did, Rashford twice fucked it up, and then once went down and moaned about Kyle Walker. They were just. But do you know what's mad about when United are this bad? It's hard to comprehend how they were this bad. I think a point that I raised, maybe after the last derby, I think I was maybe on the review after the game at Old Trafford earlier this season, and I said we had an excuse for being that bad. We were going into transfer windows with a £3.5 million transfer kitty. We had nothing to spend.
£3.5 million?
They are spending £200 million a year. They're spending £200 million a year and they're still this bad.
Money isn't everything, it's crazy. I think most City fans know that the amount of money you spend doesn't correlate to the success. We can accept that, but at the same time.
But it's quite remarkable to ask the question. It is remarkable to spend that much money and still be that bad. There is a floor you are expected to be on if you do spend that much money, and that is top four, top five. Play some half decent football and be somewhat tactically capable. They are none of the above. It was hilariously shocking. It wouldn't have been funny if we hadn't won because of how shite they were, but we did. Mm. So we're free to laugh about it.
I think we've got to lap this up while we can, because Ten Hag is clearly a dead man walking based on this season. Like after his comments after the game where he was asked if this result and performance showed the gulf in class between the two teams, and he said no. Like that's it. Like when you've got Jim Ratcliffe coming out in an interview 2 weeks ago saying us and Liverpool are like streets ahead, and then after getting spanked
27 with shots versus 20, three
27 and shots and 26 possessions later out. And you're saying nah, the difference isn't that big. Like, mate, you are out. Like
let me put it this way. United could have played 500 more passes and they still wouldn't have had as many as City did in that game. Such was the gulf in class.
So Ten Hag obviously whether it's a case of just he will refuse to say it in a press conference, which I can understand, because if you're a United manager and you say, like, you get the Moyes treatment, don't you? Like that tweet of it, we just need to get better at passing, tackling, defending and everything like that. That still does the rounds every so often, doesn't it? So you don't want to become that United manager. But I think to not acknowledge where the clubs are at as the manager is just a bit mad when the new incumbent owner has literally said in the last fortnight that the gulf in class very much is there. And then you put in a performance which literally just embodies that in every possible way. They're a really mad club at the moment. And I was fully enough before you mentioned Mr. Aristine, Mr. Might as well be Celtic Housen earlier. Before we started this, I was watching his take on the game, because that's what I do after these kind of performances, because I just love it. And they're just, they, even now, they think that the only difference between the two is ownership. And they think that if they, so they think that in the sort of the mentality that in the delusion that United fans have is that now we've got new, you know, now Ratcliffe's at the wheel, we're going to be fine. And they, you know, don't get me wrong, but they certainly won't be fine next year, but they're going to be on, it looks like they're probably going to be on the, with Mr. Berada at the helm and with everything else, Dan Ashworth coming in and stuff like that. They're unfortunately going to start, that oil tanker is going to start slowly turning around, and we might be witnessing the absolute nadir of Manchester United at the moment, which would be a shame, but it would also be so much more sweet if they were still this bad in 2 years' time.
Not often I also plug other content creators, but to follow on from what Joe just said, if you've not, listeners, seen yet, Mark Goldbridge's reactions to the goals. I implore
it's fine, they
to
won't listen
so.
To this. Mr. Housen and Mr. Goldbridge are not listening to this podcast. It's all right.
Listeners, go and chase up the Goldbridge clips from the goals, because they are funny.
Yeah, I want to end today's show, the first and last time I'll ever go on a United forum. In fact, it might be a new segment after Derby Days, but the United Fans Forum Red Cafe, I've just gone onto their post-match thread and some of the comments from... Yeah, so yeah, exactly. Some of the comments from fans. Wonder goal aside, horrible training session for City. Our lack of quality compared to City is downright embarrassing. We are years away from competing. Honestly, not much to complain about. City are fucking light years ahead of us. We did well to lead for so long. Pathetic, cowardly football, League One versus Premier League level. Help yourself to 30 shots, City. We'll have two.
And then the manager says it was good. And then the manager says it was good. Can you imagine? Oh my God.
Yeah, hilarious. And look, as we said at the top, we'll never get bored of this. A wonderful review, Joe. Thank you very much.
It was nice. Last time I was on for a review, it was after Chelsea, and it felt like cleansing myself. But this has just been much better.
A bit of a party, hasn't it, Ollie? Lovely stuff. Thank you very much.
Cathartic, as you say. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. For a different reason this time. Listeners, we'll be continuing these good vibes tomorrow, so make sure you stick around for that. Until next time, it's been a pleasure. We'll see you later.
Make sure you're geared up for Man City's end of season run-in with McDelivery. Great food delivered right to your door. By using McDelivery, you won't miss a moment of City's crucial run-in, and just like Kevin De Bruyne, they deliver your order exactly where you want it. Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. Are you in? At participating restaurants only, 18 and plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.